Number 14, review of the Columbia River Fishery Management Policy, C-3620. This is, again, a briefing and a public hearing. Guy Norman, Ron Roller, welcome back.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. For the record, my name is Guy Norman, and I am Southwest Washington Regional Director for the Department. And with me today is Ron Roller, who is the Columbia River Policy Coordinator for the Department, and he also works out of Region 5. So today we're, as per the direction of the Commission policy, we're going to review the first year of implementation of the Columbia River Basin Salmon Management Policy, C-3620. We've got about a 45-minute presentation scheduled, however, recognizing that seismic activity may start here pretty soon from CenturyLink Stadium, I think we could get through this much quicker. I see thumbs up from Commissioner Carpenter. So I guess I would ask the commissioners, as I'm moving through, if I'm going too fast, stop me for clarification.
Yes, I did.
So real quick, process background. Generation of this policy began with a coordination effort between the two commissions, Oregon Fish and Wildlife and Washington Fish and Wildlife Commissions, and met last fall 2012 several times working through the reform options for the policy, which led to adoption of the policy in January 2013. I've listed in this PowerPoint presentation the guiding principles. I think this is where I'm going to speed up the pace a little bit. I'm not going to go into detail on these guiding principles. They're listed in the policy itself. And I also want to call the attention to the commissioners and the public that there is a comprehensive report that was generated by the Columbia River staff. And I believe the commissioners have a copy of that, and it's also on the website. So it goes into a lot of detail in terms of implementation of the provisions of the policy as well as conduct of the fisheries. And what is ahead of us in 2014 in terms of implementation of the policy. So let me move to the elements of the transition period, which began with 2013 and continues through 2016. The main direction there is a progressive shift of the main stem salmon allocation to the sport fishery, starting in 2013. Further development of selective gear for the main stem commercial fishery, increasing salmon production in the off-channel areas, which is beginning in particular on the Oregon side of the river, investigating expansion of off-channel fishing areas for the commercial fishery. We do have an experiment going on right now on the Washington side of the river with regard to the Cathlamet Channel, and we're beginning to develop that site as a potential long-term site for spring Chinook salmon. Begin development of a commercial buyback program, and I'll get into that in a little more detail a little bit later. And then consider additional measures to enhance the fishery management effectiveness, and that has to do with gathering technical information, run size forecasts, et cetera. So as we move into review of the policy, we'll go through the elements that are listed on this slide, the processes and events in 2013 that have affected the implementation of the policy, the public processes that transpired during 2013. We'll go through the provisions of the policy and what has occurred in 2013 relative to those provisions. We'll get into some specific fisheries implementation, the policy guidelines, and then the performance of the fisheries, in particular catch, ex-vessel value, and angler trips. Talk a little bit about the adaptive management plan and what that meant for 2013 and what it means for the future. And then what the 2014 plan is and dates for moving forward with implementation of the policy. So let me get into some related events to implementation in 2013. First of all, litigation. So in March of 2013, there was a case filed by commercial interests in Wakayakum County asking the court to repeal the policy. That case was refiled in Thurston County, which was the proper jurisdiction for that case. In April, the Thurston County judge dismissed the case, and then just recently here in mid-December, the litigants filed an appeal on the case, so we're waiting for an appeal to the state court and a date for that. In Oregon, in January, there was an appeal filed by commercial interests in Oregon for rules that they filed in December of 2012. In February, the Oregon court did grant a stay of the rules, and that affected management planning as we moved into the North of Falcon process, whereas Oregon had a stay of the rules. Washington rules, of course, even though there was a case filed, were not there was not a stay in the state of Washington. The Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission readopted their rules in June after further studies, and in particular on the economic aspects of the plan. In October, the court denied a stay on those particular rules. In December, the Oregon court denied an appeal of a stay on the rules. And right now, the case in 2014 will move to review of the rules themselves, the merits of the case. With regard to Washington legislation, the one aspect that applies to the Washington legislation is emerging commercial fisheries designation. So as we move into implementation of SANE gear, there is an RCW in Washington that directs how we plan and implement an experimental fishery. So if the experimental fishery has a limited entry designation, which this one has been qualified as limited entry by the director, the director appoints a 5-member board, an advisory board, to make recommendation with regards of rules for limited entry. And then the director issues permits for that participation. So we are going through that process as we speak. We have had two meetings with a 5-member emerging fisheries advisory board. We've also had public meetings with our commercial advisors, as well as other full public meetings addressing rules for implementation of the SANE fishery. And we plan to come back to the commission in February as an agenda item to report to the commission the findings and options for moving forward with rules for implementing a SANE fishery. Regarding the Oregon legislation, Senate Bill 830 in Oregon was passed, which repeals the rules which made it unlawful to take salmon and steelhead with fixed gear or SANE, so made the SANE gear legal in the state of Oregon. And they also established an enhancement fund to enhance fisheries, optimize economic benefits, and advance conservation. And this particular bill included $1.5 million into the general fund for the state of Oregon, and then also authorized a recreational enhancement endorsement similar to what we have in Washington. And they expect that they will probably receive about $2 million per biennium with that particular endorsement. And then there's another $500,000 that were passed in this bill to establish a transition fund to provide assistance to individual commercial fishermen. And this is for transitioning into gear, potentially buyback. These monies will be submitted to counties to and the fishermen would apply to individual counties for these transition funds. I've learned recently that these funds are open to Oregon licensed gillnet commercial fishermen, regardless of where they reside. So if there's Washington residents that have an Oregon gillnet license, they can also apply. With regard to the public processes in 2013, we held 39 Columbia River compacts. which is pretty average. We've been in this 40 to 50 compacts per year to implement fisheries. These include three pre-season compacts for each fall, summer, and, I mean, spring, summer, and fall seasons. And then the rest of them are in-season compacts to manage these fisheries within all of the mandates and guidelines for allocation, the ESA, et cetera. We had several recreational and commercial advisory committee meetings. Those are focused on coordinating with the user groups to plan for seasons and get their input in terms of how they want to conduct their seasons. We had two meetings with a recreational sub-allocation work group. That work group was focused on, as per the commission policy, to review fishery objectives in the Lower Columbia, Bonneville to McNary, and the Lower Snake with regard to spring Chinook fishing and the allocation. So we have held two of those meetings. We have another meeting scheduled for mid-January with the full recreational advisor group. And we're also coordinating with Oregon at the same time, and we do plan to come with a specific report to the commission on those findings in February as well. Of course, the North of Falcon process that meets in March and April to plan for summer and fall fisheries, and that occurred in 2013, and as I indicated earlier, full implementation of the plan at that time was handicapped by the fact that Oregon had the court stay. And then, as I mentioned, we had the two meetings with the Emerging Fisheries Advisory Board. So with regard to the gillnet license buyback, we're coordinating with Oregon Fish and Wildlife and the industry to evaluate interest in the gillnet license buyback program. We're also working on, along with Oregon, developing a database for historic effort and ex-vessel values in recent history for the fishery. Researching past buyback programs, there were three such programs between 95 and 98 in the state of Washington, where some 154 Washington gillnet licenses were bought back through federal assistant programs. And then, of course, we had to continue to investigate potential funding sources. Those were federal funds that implemented the buyback back in the 90s. Regarding development and implementation of alternative gear, we're working on a three-year study, mortality study specifically. The studies for seine gear started out with focusing on what's the ability of the seine gear to catch the fish, and has moved into a focus on what is the long-term release mortality for the various species, in particular the listed species that are encountered and released in the gear. The test fishing results have indicated that these seine fisheries can be effective in harvesting Chinook and coho. They do, in the fall time, encounter summer steelhead, some of which are listed. And then in the summertime, sockeye, which are intermingled with summer Chinook. So one of the keys to managing the seine fishery is getting a handle and getting agreement on what the long-term release mortality is so we can work it through ESA allocations. And we did have a pilot October coho tangle net fishery in late October, mark selective, and there were in the neighborhood of 30 to 40 fishermen that participated. We were pleased with the mark rate. It was an over a 70% mark rate during that time of year. And they caught some 4,000 coho or so in that fishery.
Oh, sorry. Commissioner Schmitten has a question.
The risk of being stoned, I do have a question. So we're down to release mortality results. How long do you think that's going to take? Is that a 1 year, 2 year? We're 3 years into just the gear itself. And I agree that release mortality is going to be important, but we have an idea. How long is that study going to require?
So Chair Wecker, Commissioner Schmitten. So 2013 is scheduled as the final year of the study. And so we're moving now into summarizing and analyzing the data and coordinating with our co-managers, scientists from National Marine Fisheries Service, tribes, states, to come to an agreement on what exactly interpretation of the data and what that mortality rate will be. Well, what mortality rate will we use as we implement the fishery? So that's transpiring here January and February. We've already had a couple meetings with the Technical Advisory Committee meeting. We're actually still waiting for some of the data from 2013. Part of the 2013 study included a radio tag study that USGS was conducting, and we're still waiting for the data from USGS. And then we're going through the process to coordinate that and ultimately be able to incorporate that into the North of Falcon planning. And we also, concurrently with that, we have a consulting process with NOAA Fisheries in order to get the ESA permit with that mortality rate. So we are cautiously optimistic that we're going to have that ready to roll by March for North of Falcon. That's what our target is. And it may be an interim mortality rate, if you will, as we continue to evaluate, but we're not sure about that yet.
Thank you.
Good. With regarding to the Washington off-channel enhancement, I think the commissioners are aware that we focused on Cathlamet Channel as really maybe the only viable large area option in the state of Washington. We've been conducting test fishing to get a handle on what the outside stock handle is in or the quantity of outside stocks are in off-channel. We've gone through our permit process. We've coordinated with the city of Cathlamet, and we actually have a site on the city docks in Cathlamet. And I just learned from Cindy today that we're going to place 10 net pens. 6 of the 10 are there, and they already have the spring Chinook. I think they were just brought in this week. So we're moving to this 250,000 spring Chinook that'll be released this coming spring, and we'll expect the first adult returns in 2016. And as we adults return and we get to the point where we're planning to implement a fishery, we will have test fishing as part of that management plan, whereas we need to get a handle on what the stock composition is there before we can determine exactly how we would manage that fishery.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Mencken?
Commissioner Mencken, there was a combination of upriver stocks and lower river stocks. I don't have all that information with me. As I recall, when they did the cut-of-water tag analysis, the upriver listed fish were not a big portion of the catch. I can only speak in general terms because I don't have the data here, but there were some outside stocks that were in the Cathlamet Channel, but of course we don't have the local stocks coming back yet, so that ratio unknown at this point. One of the keys will be survival of those Cathlamet release fish in order to, if we have a high survival, we'll have the highest ratio of upriver versus lower river stocks. My opinion, and knowing that part of the river a little bit, if there is extremely high water, we may see a higher incidence of upriver fish. If we've got medium water, we may not, because they like to go main channel on the Oregon side. So that's one of the things that I think we will need to adjust in season if we implement this fishery. For whatever stocks we're seeing in a particular week, a lot of it will depend on conditions. We're going to keep test fishing this year and the next year to try and, you know, get a better handle as well.
Is that for a concern from people that that's really just another channel of the main stem Columbia and it's not really an off-channel area? So I'd be concerned about interception of upriver stocks.
Director Anderson?
I think that's true. if we're going to have any kind of a participation by the Washington fleet in harvesting spring Chinook, that's about our only game in town. We got to try it, make sure we, it's, it'd probably be a real stretch to say it was a safe area. Is it an area where we can put some hatchery production in there and have some relatively low encounter rates with upriver fish and provide some opportunity?
Yeah,
that's what we'll have to find out. Yeah. But if absent this being successful, there's not a lot of other places there are to go, and that essentially leaves safe areas in Oregon with very, very, very minimal Washington participation. So,
so moving into Oregon Select areas and what they've done to date, so they're also investigating opportunities to expand their season's end boundaries. So they're concentrating on the existing safe areas, and is there an opportunity to expand those boundaries to some degree? They also, as commissioners recall, in the planning process, they plan to enhance, increase production in the safe areas. And what I've listed here is the target number, and then the number they actually put in 2013, additional fish. For example, 500,000 juvenile spring Chinook was the target in 2013, and they actually released 389,000. That was also associated with the court stay, whereas they were not enacting their production, full production enhancement because of the court stay. They caught up somewhat once the stay was listed, but by the time you get to late spring, a lot of these spring Chinook have to be released wherever they're at. Expectations for 2014, if you look at that, you can see that they've got a bit of a makeup plan there for some of the shortfalls. They're increasing that number in 2014 even beyond what the expectations were for the plan. And we just kept this map in here. I think commissioners have seen it before. Just to once again refamiliarize yourself with where the select areas are, you can see those three main sites on the Oregon side, and then Cathlamet Channel on the Washington side. We don't have a pointer here, do we? We'll have...
That's the red pointer right here.
Yeah. So that's what we're focusing on the Washington side. And you can see Deep River's there. Deep River has been very unsuccessful with spring Chinook. I think this year's harvest of spring Chinook was just over 100 fish, but successful with coho. So good for coho, poor for spring Chinook. That's how we're trying to see if we can work spring Chinook into the Cathlamet Channel. And just this is a table that was also reported as we were developing the policy. Here is the plan for increased production for each of the stocks. For example, spring Chinook in Oregon started with 1.2 million, advanced to 1.7 during this transition period. That's that 500,000 increase. And then up to 1.95 million per year 2017 on and beyond, so you have another 250,000 on top of this 500,000 increase during the transition period. I know it doesn't look like an increase for spring Chinook in Washington, going from 350 to 250, but the 350 is what was once being released in Deep River, and we were getting so low survival, basically, that was not translating into adults. And so we're regarding this, if the Cathlamet Channel can increase that survival to the point where Oregon fish are surviving, then that will be a significant increase in terms of adult return, which is the main scope.
Director Anderson?
On that safe area production piece, there was also considerable concern that BPA was going to pull back their funding for that production, or for their proportion of that production, and we did have that as a part of our conversation when we met with BPA officials on Monday. They seemed to misunderstand what the recommendations and wishes of the Power Council were, as well as the two states. So I walked away there with some cautious optimism that that funding would continue. for that, for those, that production.
So just quickly, additional plan provisions that we will report on here before I turn it over to Ron to do a summary on the fisheries. So beginning in 2013, anglers were required to use barbless hooks to aid in safe release of wild fish. Increased management certainty was another provision, and so we're continuing to work to ensure funding, particularly federal funding, continues to provide monitoring and collection of data and analysis, which are key for Columbia River management. And then in terms of improving accuracy of preseason forecasts, we continue to work on that with our co-managers. Certainly with spring Chinook, I think, is where we would like to improve that accuracy. We've had some relative success, but there has been, in-season has been different from the preseason in spring Chinook, probably more so than any other stocks. Fall Chinook, summer Chinook, sockeye, I think we've been pretty close in general on those forecasts, but we're continuing to work with our co-managers and other scientists to pre-season forecast improvements as much as we can. But the key in the Columbia River is in-season management, in-season run updates, and so these are fluid management activities. That's why we have some 40-odd compacts per year continuing to micromanage these fisheries in-season, collecting data not only on run size updates, but to stock-specific fisheries catch, et cetera.
Commissioner Smith has a question.
Has there been much pushback on the barbless hook?
Commissioner Smith, there are certainly from the recreational angler community, there are some that are not pleased with it. It is a transition in the Columbia River. We haven't had that rule in the past in Columbia River management. I think maybe it's the first-year shock syndrome that may fade over time. There are others that have been supportive of this, too. So that's
yeah, that was the other part of the question. So that's transition.
So I'm going to turn it over to Ron to just do a quick summary on the fisheries.
Columbia River Spring Chinook fisheries, the policy was ESA allocation of 65 sport, 35 commercial. That was adjusted because Oregon had a stay. So we had to move back to what it kind of what we had previously been at. So we're 60% sport, 35% commercial, and 5% undeclared. So we had an additional 5% buffer last year. The recreational Upper River Spring Chinook harvest guideline was 7,600. Actual harvest was about 6,300 with about 123,900 angler trips. The commercial Upper River Spring Chinook, the harvest guideline was a little over 2,600. Actual harvest was almost 2,200. The summer Chinook fisheries policy, ESA allocation was 60% sport, 40% commercial. We had to adjust it also because of the stay. So it was 55% sport, 35% commercial. The recreational summer harvest below Priest Rapids guideline was 2,621. Below Priest Rapids Dam actual was almost 2,100 with 26,500 angler trips. Above Priest Rapids Dam actual, about 2,400. The commercial summer Chinook harvest, the guideline was a little over 2,100, and the actual harvest was about 1,900. Fall Chinook fisheries. Sport fishery can use up to 70% of fall Chinook ESA impacts if needed to meet sport season objectives. The commercial fishery needs sufficient ESA impacts to target upriver bright fall Chinook. And Chinook harvest, the sport harvest below Pasco, essentially the Lower River, almost 80,000 fish with over 200,000 angler trips. The Hanford Reach sport fishery caught an additional 19,300. Both those two harvests were records. That Hanford Reach sport fishery, over 33,000 angler trips. And the commercial main stem harvest is 86,400 and had an additional 23,700 from select area fisheries. And to give you an idea, when we were modeling pre-season, we were estimating about 50,000 for each of the Lower River fisheries, Lower River sport, Lower River commercial. The much larger than expected run size increased catch significantly. Coho fisheries. But a commercial fishery focus on off-channel and development of selective techniques for October. Recreational focus on primarily on buoy 10 and tributary fisheries. Sport main stem harvest of 11,100, mostly from buoy 10. Commercial main stem was about 9,600, an additional 42,500 from select area. The sockeye harvest. The ESA allowance is 1% of the Snake River wild, and 70% of that is allocated to sport. Sport harvest below Priest Rapids Dam is 500. Sport harvest above Priest Rapids Dam was 5,700. And the commercial harvest was 100. Looking at angler trips, we had 360,600 angler trips in the Lower River, and above Bonneville, we had 37,300. We've already talked about some of those catches. Commercial X vessel. We had about 3.4 million in the main stem, an additional 2.3 million in the select areas. The main area was, of course, the Chinook in the late early fall and late fall, as that was the Zone 4-5 Chinook fishery. That was about 2.7 million of the overall harvest there.
Commissioner Kehoe.
Yeah, I have a quick question. I hate to interrupt, but I have a question about the select area, the commercial, the X vessel value. Does that include Oregon and Washington, or is that?
That is both states.
Okay, thanks.
Ron's going to turn it back to me to wrap this up. I may just add, mention on that X vessel value, if commissioners recall, there was as we worked through the work group process, there was a table that was generated that had some at least rough estimates of what X vessel value would be during the transition period, with the idea that it would not be reduced from the base period. Even though those are, you know, they're largely variable associated with run size. The expectation was $3.8 million for select area plus main stem combined. As you can see, this is $5.7 million. But there's about $2 million more total fall Chinook return than what we anticipated. And as Ron indicated, most of that's associated with the main stem, but there was more fall Chinook return in the Young's Bay select area as well, because those fish did well too. So it was a couple million more than expected, but when you get over a million upriver Bright Fall Chinook into the river, record run like that, everybody capitalized all the way up the river, all the way to the Hanford Reach. So So just quickly, the adaptive management plan is laid out in the policy, so I'm not going to go through this in any specifics, but the bottom line is tracking implementation, and if expectations are not achieved, there's a list of criteria that would trigger change, and the department's responsibility is to report back to the commission if there's any adaptive management need triggered, and then commission could consider adjustments. So in 2013, we did have a slight exercise of adaptive management in late May. So with the spring Chinook season, we had some fish left over for both recreational and commercial fisheries after the run size update, and so we had late May opportunity for the commercial fishery. Happens to coincide with the peak of the shad run as well. And it just so happened that in 2013, we had 4 million shad returned to the Columbia River, up from the normal 2 million. And so as fishermen were attempting to access spring Chinook with tangle net gear that's the perfect size to intercept shad, some fishermen were going through over 100 shad to get after one or two spring Chinook. And, of course, wild spring Chinook need to be recovered and released, and there's a total soak time of 45 minutes from the time the corks go in the water to where they're retrieved. And so the difficulty in the practical application of that fishery, we set a large mesh gillnet fishery instead, alleviated the shad handle, and they were able to handle the fish, the spring Chinook, in a much better way. So quickly, this is the last slide here, 2014 implementation, moving forward with our emerging fishery rules process. We'll report to the commission next month with the idea to get rules in place in time for pilot seine fisheries in the fall of 2014. We talked about the mortality study, got to get that completed. Moving into the North of Falcon process, well, we will consider policy objectives, commission policy objectives, including allocation, season structures, and incorporate this pilot seine fishery and a coho tangle net fishery into the mix of planning. The allocations, at this point in time, we don't have any court stays that apply, so spring Chinook allocation will go to 70% sport in 2014, summer Chinook to 60%, and then we'll continue with the up to 70% ESA allocation for the sport fisheries for fall Chinook, if that is necessary to meet the sport fishery objectives, which are listed in the policy. We'll continue our off-channel enhancement research. We'll need to develop a monitoring plan for this pilot seine fishery. And as I meant, well, I didn't mention this, but we are expecting another extremely large upriver bright return here in 2014. That 2013 return was dominated by age 3 fish, and the dominant age class is age 4 for upriver bright, so that cohort will be coming back in 2014, and we should have another magnificent upriver bright run. That concludes our report.
Thank you so much. Excellent job. Very informative. Any questions for Guy or Ron?
Is there any market for the shad?
Commissioner Schmitten, there is, but it's very limited. There are two markets, one shad roe. There's an Asian market that for shad roe, but it's limited. And then crab bait. So it's a females are more valuable, difficult to sort that out. We do have a directed shad fishery still in the Columbia.
Commissioner Smith?
Yeah, just a follow-up on that. Has there ever been a promotion of the shad fishery as you know, a development of a new fishery? Because I'm just taking from the East Coast model where it is an attractive game fish, and is it the same shad, I guess, first?
Commissioner Smith, I guess I'm not sure if it's the same shad. These shad were introduced from Asia. and actually into the Sacramento River, and they strayed to the Columbia several decades ago, and have been very successful in reproducing and returning in the Columbia. But there is in terms of the promotion, there is a robust recreational fishery on shad in the Columbia. And a commercial fishery. There has been some attempts, and I believe it was by American Canadian, the fish processor, with a Chinese market. And they were working on that a couple of years ago, and it was sort of in the forefront for a while, and I haven't heard anything about it for a while. But it's when you have 2 to 4 million shad a year, it's the recreational fishery, I think, intercepts 100,000 a year or so, and maybe about that many with the commercial as well. So it doesn't put much of a dent into the return.
It does seem like an opportunity. I don't, somewhere along the line.
Director Anderson?
I was just on the question about barbless hooks and whether how controversial it was and what the level of acceptance was. And there may be some variation depending on where you are in the main stem. I know when Commissioner Schmitten and I were in Brewster, there wasn't a lot of acceptance there yet. That was in September.
That's calmed down.
Has it?
Right. The year.
Okay.
Commissioner Kehoe, did you have a...
I have some comments I'd like to make, but I think it's appropriate we have the public testify first, and then I'll just leave my comment to the end.
Any other questions for staff? Thanks so much. This has been a tremendous amount of work. But you're used to the compact cycle, so I remember the long messages on the telephone, the system that we used to call in on, Bill Twight, endless descriptions of those meetings. So appreciate all your work.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Okay, we do have some people who've signed up to testify on this item. So I think you're all old hands. Just a reminder, 3-minute rule still applies. So when you hear the beeping noise, wrap it up, please. And I'll call you up two at a time. David Hollingsworth and Don McBride, if you'd come forward, pick a chair in front of a mic.
Don McBride might not be there. He's expecting to be there.
Okay. Okay, well, Heath, do you want to come forward then?
Dave Hollingsworth, Columbia River Fisherman. In regards to the seine permits that they're going to issue, I guess. I'm not sure how that's going to roll out, but I believe every Columbia River gillnet license should have a chance, equal opportunity to receive a seine permit, such as a lottery or something. And I don't know what they've come up with, but it should be fair across the board, not exclusive to somebody that's been testing or whatever's been going on. Every guy should have a chance. Every license should have a chance, I should say. So, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mike Bachman, please come forward.
Mr. It's good to see you again. Spent a lot of time, obviously, in 2012 on this policy with those of you who served on the working group, and 2013 has been busy. I think you know that CCA has intervened in both states in the ongoing litigation. Earlier this week, I was going through 4 binders about that high of the administrative record in the Oregon case, because we've now moved into the merits on that case. So, but I think based on Guy kind of mentioned this, the passage of SB 830, and I think how important that was in terms of providing the transition assistance, the ongoing money to implement this thing on the Oregon side, the legalization of selective gear, and it actually, that legislation called for the rules themselves. So, the elected officials in Oregon have stepped up in a big way on that. In regard to Commissioner Mankin's question, I know Guy didn't have him at his fingertips. We have raised questions, about Kathlamet Channel. channel. The first year testing results on that was about 51% upriver fish, 49% lower river, about 20% of them unmarked. But I think Commissioner Anderson's comments are something to consider in terms of how you make this policy work for both sides of the river. And like it or not, the safe areas have been heavy to the Oregon side for a long time. They safe area harvest count for about 50% of the overall harvest of Lower Columbia River commercial right now. That's a huge portion, and so those are going to increase with all these hatchery transfers and smolt transfers that are happening. So the question really becomes, and the comment before me, how do we provide main stem opportunity with selective gear moving forward? And I think that is the real test in 2014 that I hope the commission is very, very engaged in, because there's some key questions about where you have that harvest, zones 4 and 5, upriver, fall Chinook, and then, how many of them, how is it consistent with our need to target excess hatchery fish in the lower river? So there's some huge issues there, and just issuing a ton of them, we already have an overcapacity problem. It's pretty clear to me in the lower river, I think, with the number of permits there. So just offering creating another problem with a seine fishery, I don't think is the right thing to do either. So we look forward to working with you in 2014. There is a lot of frustration. Marvelous hooks amongst the membership, Young's Bay control zones that are talked about getting set up to shut down recreational fisheries there. $10 fees, but the recreational fishing community has bought into this to make it work, and I hope we can work with you to make sure it gets implemented as you guys intended. So appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Commissioner Smith has a question.
Sorry, munching away here.
Yeah.
On the barbless hooks.
Yeah.
Is your membership, how would you characterize your membership in terms of acceptance of them?
I think a lot of it is consistent with what was said here in terms of a change. We took the position of CCA to say if it benefits conservation, we really ought to do it, particularly when we're talking about trying to increase the selectivity of the fisheries. But at the same time, I got members, and I think it's a legitimate point, who have said, why haven't we changed the release mortality? If this is a benefit in terms of hooking mortality going to barbless hooks, then the department really ought to look at changing that release mortality, because that's what drives everything in the river. And so PFMC, when you went to barbless hook in the salt water, actually did account for a lower release mortality. So that would be an example where it could happen. That would make sense to people a little bit more. In some ways it feels arbitrary, but a lot of things in fishery management feel that way anyways.
Thanks.
Thank you. Greg Johnson. Okay, Mr. Bachman.
Okay, we need to follow Oregon in setting the money aside for helping the transition into this alternative gear. They put $500,000 to help, so that way the people who aren't set up for this can help get set up for this. And right now Washington has a big zero set aside. We also need a more aggressive buyout or loans. You're wiping out a fishery, and you're not really giving these people an honest chance. If you had like small farm loans, they can buy into Southeast or go do something. But what you're doing is you're spending millions of dollars to do a study of a study, and then say, "Oh, sorry, we ain't got 10 cents to help you, the guy that's actually working for a living." And I think that's sad, and I think it's pathetic. And as you can tell, it's close to my heart. And it's just very upsetting. And I hope you can try to figure out how to keep this process somewhat fair. And I find it, this is, to hear you guys talk about a football game like it's the all God, great, mighty, whatever, when we're here talking about a living, it's pretty upsetting. We wouldn't want to miss kickoff. No, we're just talking about our livelihoods here. And take that home with you.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson?
Hi, I'm Greg Johnson, commercial fisherman, Vancouver, Washington. I'm just going to respond to a few of the things that have been discussed here. In terms of the cathlab, first of all, Kent Martin, who usually comes here, has had a back surgery, and he's out of business in terms of travel for a while. But I did discuss this cathlamic channel with him, and and also know one of the testers. But if you consider that whole area from the entrance to the exit of where the water passes, and you'd consider that just a whole grid, they're going to test the whole area. Okay, there may be hot areas within it. It's not sure necessarily that all fish enter from the bottom where you would expect and just come right through the system. Some of them may be backing down. So potentially, you don't know what the fishery would actually look like. They may find the upper end at the upriver fisher backing down or something. So that's why it's kind of the same deal we went in some of our arguments about this policy, is that you've got a test fishery, so let's not go ahead and kill the test and before the data's there and to tell you what it is if it's a warranted fishery. Kind of with this policy, we don't really have a fishery yet. We have an idea of a fishery. We don't know what the impacts are. We don't know how the fishery will behave in terms of the alternate gear fishery. So, and that is a concern I have, is, we've shown that some fishers can catch fish with the alternate gear, and we've also shown that some fishers had a difficult time with it. And but moving into the 2014 North of Falcon process, where we've got to, try to fine-tune this and create the most opportunity with the impacts we can, we'll be pulling impacts out of the gillnet fishery this time, as opposed to those prior. We didn't do that. Those mortalities came from were scientific mortalities, you might say. So that's a concern for me. Not that we have a fishery. That's the policy dictates it and says we'll move forward that way. But the concern for me is that we don't know how this new fishery will perform. First of all, half the harvest within the beach chains occurred above the area we're going to fish, above Lewis River. Well, this pilot study is going to occur below Lewis River. And so we don't know how those beaches will perform and so proceeding cautiously, but that information is necessary, but proceeding cautiously is important because, for example, one steelhead mortality in a gillnet fishery this past year in September was worth 6,000 fish. Now, we're going to go out in the same fishery and maybe handle 10,000 steelhead as an example. Check with staff on this. But I remember from the modeling last year. Now, that's where the mortality rate comes in. If it's 2%, that's one thing. But if it's 10%, we may not have a game here at all. So, thank you.
Thank you. That concludes the public input for this item. Commissioner Kehoe, did you want to make some remarks?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll be brief. I am one of the new commissioners, and this policy has come about. Prior to my being on the commission, I have a lot to learn about this, and I'm optimistic that it can work for everybody. But I do have some concerns. And I just want to put those on the record so that, so as we move forward, and some of these were addressed, but I'd just like to just talk about, the feasibility of the seine gear. We heard some, still work is ongoing. We did hear in the Fish Committee some indications that there was high encounter rates of steelhead and also sockeye, which to me is not surprising with seine gear. I mean, you that's how seines work. You use you fish in a larger area, so that's not surprising. I am going to be working and working with the staff and trying to see how this works. So I've got some questions about that, and also, the ability to make a seine fishery economically viable, particularly purse seines, when you have a lot of capital costs, extra crew come into play. Not to say that it can't be done, but it's going to be interesting to see how this moves forward. Also have some concerns about the safe area developments in Washington. And also funding for these safe areas. As far as funding is concerned, the commission, we don't appropriate the state's money. It would be nice, but we don't. And so, and we all know how tight the budget is, and hopefully there's some relief, but I mean, that remains to be seen. So there was a commitment to development these safe areas and hatchery production. We'll see if that comes to pass. And then also, too, the funding of the buyback. Guy Norman mentioned the Gillnet licenses and other commercial licenses that were purchased in the 90s. I think he was referring to Puget Sound. A lot of those were bought in Puget Sound. And I have a lot of knowledge about that. Our organization was intimately involved in securing the funding for that. That came about through the renegotiation of the Fraser Panel, or the Fraser Annex to the Pacific Salmon Treaty, where the non-treaty share was reduced significantly. And in return for that, there was a $30 million in federal money and $5 million in state money that was appropriated. And this is back in the mid-90s. We're in a much different climate today in terms of availability of public money for these types of things. Things were much different in the 90s. The other thing I think to consider as far as federal funding is concerned is the federal nexus. Maybe there is a federal nexus here with this policy. Perhaps, certainly there was with the Puget Sound buyback. That's a concern to me about, I mean, it's one thing to put a buyback on a policy, whether it actually follows through, we follow through on that. Again, I'm optimistic and hopeful that does occur. So that's my comment. I wanted to put those out on the record for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Well done. Any other comments? I guess Director Anderson?
On the issue of buyback, and I don't know all the data that Guy was looking at, but, you know, the first buybacks came about following the Bolt decision. Mm-hmm. And there and the first buybacks that came about were for all commercial gear types. Mm-hmm. They also purchased the boat. And there's been license-only buyback since, but I believe there's been three different buybacks that I can remember, and the third one being the one in the 90s that Commissioner Kehoe spoke to. But we've experimented, the state has experimented with different types of buyback programs that date all the way back. I believe that first one was in 1980. I won't debate the date with you, but I do recall that it was, and then there was a moratorium put on licenses in 1977 on all commercial licenses, and it was following that the buyback came along. But you and I can debate history sometime.
Okay. Any other comments? Presentation. I did want to assure everyone who's affected by our policy that we do take it very seriously. We were joking a little earlier about everyone wanting to get to the game, but you see us here. We're spending the time required to look at the effects of our policy decision last year. We do take it seriously. Is there anything else to add at this point? I think we've heard an excellent presentation. We'll hear another one next year, another review. And the final item on our agenda is the miscellaneous and meeting debrief. Commissioner Kenney?
Notice someone just came in. If they were looking at the 1 o'clock time, I didn't know if they were here for public testimony or not.
Yes, I was. I'm sorry.
Oh, are you the person? Are you Don McBride?
I'm Don McBride, yes.
Okay, come forward and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Appreciate your patience. My name is Don McBride. I live in Richland, Washington. I'm an active member of the Coastal Conservation Association, Washington, and a strong supporter of the health of our fisheries. As you know, several volunteer leaders from CCA testified at the November Commission meeting to express concerns and recommendations about the implementation of the new Columbia River Fishery Reform Plan, and I believe their testimony has been resubmitted for your information. Along with many other anglers up and down the Columbia River, I've supported the policy you adopted last January, which recognized the economic, social, and conservation benefits of recreational fisheries by establishing a recreational priority for the main stem. And the policy allows for continued gillnet use in off-channel safe areas, which already provide nearly 50% of lower Columbia River commercial harvests, and provides more hatchery production to make up for the loss of gillnet opportunity in the main stem. It also paves the way for truly selective commercial harvest in the main stem to help us meet our hatchery reform and conservation goals. These overarching components of the plan just make sense. I had great hope that this policy would end the long-standing controversy over the use of gillnets in the Columbia River. I'm hearing from a lot of recreational anglers who have serious doubts about whether the plan will be implemented consistent with these basic tenets. The departments are moving forward with some of the most controversial aspects of the policy, like new tangle net fisheries, hardly selective, establishing new safe areas in a large channel of the Columbia River at Cathlamet Channel, and talking about recreational closures during commercial fisheries, but providing very little information about specific plans for implementing a true recreational priority or shifting over to selective commercial gear. In addition to these concerns, there is little positive news about what will be coming for our recreational fisheries. While the commercial changes get delayed, new sport fishing restrictions are being front-loaded immediately, like barbless hooks and area closures near Young's Bay. I can assure you that recreational anglers will be watching very closely as this policy is implemented in 2014. A more robust effort to show how this policy will benefit recreational anglers and the health of our fisheries up and down the river will go a long way towards maintaining the support from WDFW's primary customer base and its largest source of funding in the challenging fiscal environment that we're in. There are opportunities to grow fishing participation, the economy, and WDFW's budget. I've seen it work firsthand in eastern Washington. I encourage the Commission to take a very active role in ensuring that this is a success, and I appreciate your leadership. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.